So yeah, Rodney, if you can just basically tell me a bit about yourself, like, so who is Rodney Rapson?
Thanks for having me on the podcast. My name is Rodney Rapson. I'm originally from Australia, born and raised there, and you know, played tennis as a kid growing up. I started pretty late. I started at 12 playing tennis, but I was always a pretty decent athlete. Played football, so soccer in Australia, a lot, and cricket.
Nice.
And then took tennis pretty seriously I'd say a year later, 13, and didn't look back. I mean, you know, like, did the usual thing, went to tournaments, lost pretty badly early on. But you know, by the time I was 16, I was making nationals, and I played Aussie Open Juniors twice. Was ranked top. I think ranked as high as 11 in the country.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, I made an All-Australian team, and then we toured Europe, and I got a gig playing club tennis here in Germany as a young guy, 17, and getting decent money. When I came over to Europe, I realized, hey, you know, my parents didn't have that much money. They were kind of blue-collar workers, I knew that it was going to cost a lot of money to try and, you know, go pro or travel around. When I went to Europe, I really understood how deep the level was and how good you needed to be to actually make a living out of it.
Yeah.
So then I'm actually very, very close friends with my child. When I was playing tennis, I don't know if you remember him, American player called Malavia Washington.
Big,
one of the big guys. And when I started playing tennis, I went to the Australian Open. I'm probably going backwards. I'm cutting my story halfway through, but I think it's an important part. I was at the Aussie Open, and he was watching his brother Mashishka play qualies.
Okay.
And I just walked up to him and just said, "Hey, I'm a massive fan." And he's like, and we started chatting, and he was really cool. He's like, "Come with me." He took me backstage, got me a pass, and I was hanging out with him. And then I've been, you know, friends with him ever since. So when, you know, he always came and stayed, you know, came over for dinner, etc. And a massive idol for me. And we became really close friends as I got older. After Germany, I actually went and stayed at his house, and was training with him, and we're talking about what to do, college, not college, etc. And I made the decision to go to college while I was at his house. So I went over there, and a couple of coaches came, and then I took a scholarship to go to the States and was there for 5 years. And after 5 years, I went to London, worked in tennis there in North London. And then in 2010, we opened up our own academy in Germany. We've been there since now 10 years. So it's been quite a journey. That's a quick background to what I do.
So tennis really is, really and truly, that is your background, really and truly.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I don't really work any, the day-to-day academy stuff for a few years now because I'm obviously, you know, full on with PlaySight, which we'll get into in a second. But because of my background in tennis and the knowledge, it's made my job easier with PlaySight. But you know, with the job I do now, I don't just look after tennis accounts. We have, you know, Chelsea Football Club under contract, Newcastle for video analysis with PlaySight. You know, all kinds of stuff going on. So,
nice.
But the tennis background is in my DNA, I would say.
Because that's why we're really speaking today. So what I want to get into is the EXO tennis event, which I believe is the first tennis tournament, like, in the coronavirus era. Is it fair to say that, you know, it was your idea, basically?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, we have a great team that helped put it together, but I'm not being bashful about saying that it was, you know, my idea at the start, because all the guys, all the boys and the guys of the team said, "You got no chance pulling this together." And I work closely with Sport Radar, which is a data company which deals in data rights, etc.
Okay.
And the two guys there, David and Jack, you know, we brainstormed the idea, but you know, they gave me the platform to be able to pull it off in terms of how to fund it, etc. But the idea of getting the players and everything, that was originally my idea. And then as it got closer, then everybody came on board, and it's been a nice let's say, went into our fifth event here. We had four in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But we were, you know, a reporter told me that the reason why we got so much buzz was not because it was just the first tennis back. It was the first sport back in, you know, Western Europe,
yeah.
and even in the States, and like it was the first stuff back. Australia was picking it up. It was crazy coverage. We had Super Bowl numbers.
Wow.
In terms of coverage. I'll send you a link in a little bit that you can have a look at. It's quite funny.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
The reach, yeah.
Because your official title is the managing director for PlaySite. Yeah. So
for Europe and UK. Yeah,
so
exactly,
so
yeah.
can you tell us a bit about like what PlaySite, like what that is as well, like just quick, yes, briefly.
PlaySite are market leaders in the space of tennis in terms of video analysis. So it's a really cool analysis tool. We work with all the big academies and federations around the world in tennis, and they use our tool to capture video and do, you know, analysis with the players and for the coaches. That's where we first started, but we've now doing a lot of stuff with automatic production, which is, you know, having their camera at the back and streaming.
Yeah.
And not just for tennis, but, you know, numerous sports. Our camera technology can do a lot of stuff automatically. And that kind of fit into this environment because we needed to have a system that would work with that cameraman, because putting this event together was not just about, you know, having a tennis event. It was about having the least amount of people on court.
Of course, yeah.
So we had the umpire and the two players, and everything else was done autonomously, from the scoreboard integration to the camera feeds, everything. And so now what we're seeing is a huge influx of other tournaments coming up, and a lot of them are adopting or using the PlaySite technology to film it, because we're still in that sort of COVID-19 pandemic,
of course, yeah,
era where everything needs to be, you know, least amount of hands on deck.
Because you kind of touched on it just now, but the first event got on the way, I'm going to say it's the 1st of May in Germany.
Yes, yeah.
Like,
yep.
How long was the planning process like leading up to that?
Yeah, it's a good question. So as soon as I had the idea, I called Dustin. So Dustin's a good friend of mine for a few years, and I called him up, and that was March, basically when the ATP made the announcement that they're stopping the tour.
Okay.
And they're going to not play any tournaments until, at that point, it was only till June was the ban.
Yeah.
Or the suspension. So I spoke to him, and, you know, all tennis players are self-employed, so that means for them their income is shot for however long. I think it's going to go a little bit longer than they're saying. First of August
is, yeah, that's the
it's
date
going
now
to push back again, probably until 95% of the players can travel,
yeah,
freely without any restrictions, they can't have an ATP tour,
of course, yeah.
So that we started planning literally on that day, and I started working closely with Dustin. And you know, Dustin is a huge part of this story because he was the one that, you know, got all the stuff from, let's say, the player's perspective ticked off, and what would be needed in terms of, you know, approvals and checks and all this kind of stuff that you do want as a player in terms of taxes, et cetera, contracts.
Yeah.
Dustin played a big role, and he's, because of the way, I don't know if you know much about Dustin's story, but he's very much been, you know, he's had a rough coming up in his background.
Someone I actually want to speak to, actually, in the future. Maybe we can speak about that later on, but yeah.
Yeah. He's a guy that knows everything on the tour because he has never relied on a manager or an agent to take care of his stuff.
Okay.
He's always taking it with him, his dad, and his mom take the decisions.
Yeah.
Which, you know, on one side is tough for him because he has to manage things that other players don't. But on the other side, it makes him very clued on as to what it is that needs to happen. And the good side of that is that once he signed on and said, okay, I'm playing,
yeah,
the amount of players that respect him and his decision making, they all knew, okay, this is legit. And it made it even easier in terms of, like, you know, getting the guys in Atlanta, because it was easy getting it here because I'm living in Germany, but then we need to run an event in Atlanta with, you know, remotely. I need to speak to the players. And so for them, it was huge for them to say, okay, Dustin's in. Then I knew Donald would sign because they're good buddies.
Yeah.
And Chris Eubanks and Pasha and all these guys, Taylor Townsend, Sasha, they all love Dustin. So, you know, that was basically in. So he's the big catalyst for the players joining this little exo tennis movement.
I guess, yeah, you can kind of say he's the highest profile player in terms of when you look at, well, the German lineup. I know Yannick Hafman, he's ranked like, I want to say 143.
Yeah, Yannick was, you know, in terms of ranking, and he was like 99 just recently. But in terms of profile, yeah, it was. I mean, Dustin's lower down in the rankings now, but he still brings that X factor when he's playing.
Of course,
I mean,
the
first week, he pulled out some ridiculous. They made his sports center in the States, one of his clips, you know. Through the
That trick shot, it's incredible, yeah.
And for him was, you know, what, for Dustin, it turned out great. None of us could have predicted that we would get this media reach.
Okay.
And we were careful. We actually didn't want to let people know. We didn't want to get media out because we just wanted to host the event and get on with it, because we wanted to be behind closed doors and just about the players. But then it got leaked out and it became a media circus. So none of us could have predicted that we would have the success that it would have had. But for Dustin, it was great because, you know, for his sponsors and for his image, he hasn't had that much of reach since he beat Nadal in 2015 at Wimbledon.
Okay, yeah.
He was on the front page of every tennis and every, you know, anything that was written about tennis, Dustin's name was there. So it was good for him as well in the end.
So just more now on the tennis event itself. So player, like, prize money, is that something that was discussed as well, like, beforehand? And, like, what's the process like behind that as well?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Dustin was a big driver of that, how we structure this, because we wanted to make sure that the players get remunerated in a decent way, more than they would on a normal tour.
Okay.
And we were able to do that because we just, you know, by the time the income comes in at a tournament and goes out, the players take a very low percentage of the total income.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's like, it's if you think about Wimbledon, I've heard something crazy that at Wimbledon, players get 13% of the total income.
Yeah, the tax is ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're the biggest assets. That's the reason why people come to watch.
Exactly.
But so in our events, and we weren't going to obviously go through individual earning each player, but the players took home around 75% of the prize pool the total income. So it means that, you know, for a player like Dustin playing three events and Yannick Hafman, and their local events, they didn't have to go very far to play them. And especially the lower ranked players, I mean, they made more money, or they're making more money during this period than they would have on the tour. When you take into account all the travel expenses that normally have to go into place, et cetera, et cetera. So, and that was an important part of the whole story, that we wanted to show that the industry, or that the way it's currently run, is a little bit broken and something needs to be addressed in the prize money pool.
And I
think we found a good balance of how to do it, at least for our events,
which is quite topical at the moment as well, like, because there's a lot of talk right now talking about, well, the possible merger of the two tours. So
like
the men's and women's game merging.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, what are your views on that?
My views, I have no views on it, because because it's a hot topic and I'm not informed enough to give you a straight up answer.
No,
I will say, and a lot of people are speaking about it, you know, players and et cetera. I think that a tour as a whole, it would make sense to have men and women play together. Although in other sports, men and women leagues are very separate, but the tour kind of follows. I think it would help the narrative behind the tennis tour, and since you're a tennis fan, you probably understand it better than most people, but I always said, and I was speaking to the players about this, there's no narrative behind the tennis tour, right? And what I mean by that is, I also unfortunately follow Arsenal Football Club and they but at least in the Premier League, I know what's going to happen. There's 38 games. You play a whole season. I know when the season starts, when it ends. I know what the first player, who comes first. I know what the, you know, top three, the other four positions get Champions League, you know, five and six. There's a story
and structure.
When the tour, if you think about the tour, right, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but for the tour for me is the four Grand Slams. I know when they happen and why they happen and what surface and how that flows.
Yeah.
Then I know the Masters are put in between that. The
1000s.
Yeah, the 1000s. I know that. And I know there's the year end, top eight.
Yeah.
Everything outside of that, I have literally no idea why a tournament's here in Europe and why is one in South America on a different surface. it's just too much tennis.
It's all very, no, like, story. Very fragmented. No, I completely agree. Yeah, no, yeah. I completely agree.
And so if people, like, forget about the joining of the tour or whatever, let's get a story or a narrative that actually makes sense for people to follow, first of all. And whether that's men and women together, whether that's, you know, salaries for players, making a certain grade, whether that's guaranteed income, that's got to be addressed first. And then you can start talking about getting men and women into, you know, the same, because essentially in the big tournaments they do play together.
But, yeah.
That's what I would say as a point to that.
No, fair enough. And yeah, to get back on track with the Exo Tennis stuff. So, like I said, the event initially started off in Germany. Now it's in the USA, Atlanta, and that was I think the first event was in mid May.
Yeah, I believe. Exactly. We started 13th. Yeah, 13th of May.
Like, so is there plans to like extend it and like maybe branch out even further, or is it just for the moment we're just staying in Germany and in the USA?
No, I mean, I'm not going to. We had a lot of requests to do more events and sell the rights and do all this kind of crazy stuff, but we're going to stick with the ones in Germany. There's a lot of stuff popping up now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I spoke to the team. I said, we can't top what we did in the first, you know, this first month of May. We ran, you know, five events here in Germany because we're still going.
Yeah.
We extended the ones in Germany. We ran four in the States remotely. Been a crazy month, but you know, eventually the tours are going to resume, and we want to get back to our normal, let's say, day jobs.
Yeah.
Of, you know, looking after what play. You know, I'm not a tournament organizer. It's been great, and I think also we don't want to lose the quality and the message of what it was that we were trying to achieve, which is give a platform to players that don't normally have that platform.
Okay.
And you know, tell a story about. You know, how we think tennis should be managed from a prize money perspective.
Yeah. So when will the last event be, like, as things stand?
Officially, we're running till middle of June.
Okay.
We probably will, like, in terms of a Germany one, will extend. At some point, we probably will run some more events in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Because it's just easy because we have the whole setup there.
Yeah.
But I don't know when that will be. It'll all depend on when the tour resumes or doesn't resume. I think there's also, I mean, one thing I'd love to do is I'd actually love to run Exo Tennis, where it's Germany versus Atlanta.
That'd be cool.
Where we'd get the guys from the US playing against the guys from Germany in like a two event series. Yeah. That would be really nice. So there's different things in the works, but you know, you need to find sponsors and fund it, and it's a big job, but you know, ideally, you never know. I think there's some opportunities there, but you know, this is not what we want to do long term.
Yeah,
because it's always going to come back.
Of course. So, and just the last thing on that, in Germany, it's just a men's event. There's no women's.
No women's. No.
Okay.
No. But... Yeah. Yeah. Just the only reason for that is that we had to put the event. You know, if you imagine us doing this event, putting it together, I only did it because I knew. I called up eight guys after Dustin. Out of the eight guys that played the first event, I knew seven of them personally.
Okay.
The eighth one was, you know, Johannes, and someone else, something like that, who came from Dustin. But the rest were all personal friends. So that's how why it started like that. And you know, the women, we've had a lot of requests for women's events. Yeah. But we just, you know, it's about bandwidth and having the resources.
We're of course. And yeah, so one of the main reasons I wanted to speak to you is just because obviously doing what we do, focusing on black tennis players, it's been kind of nice to see in the Atlanta event anyway, a lot of black tennis players. So you mentioned briefly already Taylor Townsend, Sasha Vickery.
Yeah, she's been on your show, right?
Sasha, yeah, exactly. We interviewed Sasha exactly a few weeks ago. Yeah, brilliant interview, she's actually. Cool. She is really, really sweet girl.
Yeah, she is.
And on the men's side, you've had Christopher Eubanks and Donald Young.
Donald Young and Nathan Pasha.
I was going to say, so these are the lesser known guys. So like, well, yeah. Nathan Pasha's someone I've literally just been introduced to through Exo Tennis. And on the women's side, Lexi Pitt and Mackenzie White as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So
they came in the last minute.
are these like college players in the US?
Yeah, lower ranked players. And I think one of the big goals for me, look, you know, growing up, also, you know, I'm not white, right?
Yeah.
I think there's got to be a distinction between non-white players and white players.
Yeah.
And I think probably right now is getting highlighted in
the media. Completely.
Right.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, but yeah.
Unfortunately, but look, in sport and tennis, especially, it still remains a rich man's game, and it's very much if you know, without being too negative, it is a very rich white man sport.
Completely.
Like it's that way. It will be that way. It's not going to change. And I was thinking about it the day when you asked me to speak about it. And I would even go further, and I think, like, if you break down players' opportunity coming up, right? So you think of look at the majority of the black players that made it, okay?
Yeah.
So they may not have money, because already as a black player, you're going to struggle regardless, right? No matter even your economic status.
Completely.
Or how much your parents earn.
Yeah.
You're going to struggle for getting selected. Talent ID is not talent identification, it's talent selection.
Yeah.
Basically, it's looking at who's the best talent right now. So there's a lot of stuff that happens, you know, and there's obviously a lot of racial undertones. When I was growing up in Australia was really racist with stuff like that as well growing up. So, but if you think about the players that made it as black players, just have a look at where they're from. So all the major black players in the States, well, they come from America.
Yeah.
Right. So if you don't have money, you've got to make sure that at least you come from a place where there's a platform for them to succeed, which is that federation has money, or has not even money, there's enough tennis going on that you can showcase your talents.
Yeah.
So, and then you look at Gael Monfils, Songa, French. Yeah. Even Dustin, he's obviously, you know, Jamaican, but he spent a lot of his time, especially when he came back from Jamaica, because he spent a lot of time in Jamaica when he was 11 till 17, 18, and came back to Germany. He knew he had to come back to Germany in terms of to be in this environment where there's good enough tennis to be played.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, until a player, let's say, comes, you know, from Africa where you think about the amount of talent that's out there, until a player really comes from, you know, a Nigeria or someone like that, a black player, you got to say that there's two parts to it. One, you're going to struggle being a black player or an ethnic minority of any sort, right, in any country.
Yeah.
The next part of that is, if you are going to try and succeed and you're in that sort of category or that bracket, you better be born in a country that's a Grand Slam nation.
Yeah.
Right? Or you better be born in an area where there's, you know, very good tennis and a platform for you to showcase your talent.
That's a really great way to break it down.
Yeah.
Really, really brilliant. Like, and that, to be honest, I've never really thought of it like that, but hearing you break it down like that, it's you make a fantastic point, because like you said, until there is a player from, you know, an African nation or, you know, West Indian nation, and they choose to represent that nation.
And they grew up there.
Exactly.
Look, I mean, even the guys in the Caribbean, they're all coming and training in Florida, etc.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just like, unfortunately, that's the way tennis is, right?
Yeah.
And you either have to have money or you need to have a platform to showcase. Even the young guy, the British kid, Jubb. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if he was not from the LTA, I mean, in the UK, I mean, he's had a rough upbringing as well, right?
Yeah.
You know, with his background, I don't know him personally, but read his story, etc. If he wasn't from a country like the LTA, no chance.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't be discovered and be on a platform. He has to work, and yes, and you have to do all those things anyway to give yourself a chance. And what I loved about this event was, when I spoke to Dustin, there's another guy who's we interviewed, and he's actually Syrian. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's a perfect story example of giving someone a platform to showcase his talent. So Dustin's very big on that as well. He called me up and said, "Hey Rod, listen, for the second event, I want you to get this guy in." And I said, "Hey Dustin, he's got zero ATP points." Dustin's like, "Trust me, he's good. He's from Syria, and he's over here as a refugee." And he told me a story, and he said, "Rodney, give him a shot." And I'm like, "Okay, yeah, we'll have a look."
Oh, good on you.
And I see the kid play, and not good on me. I mean, this kid is unreal.
Yeah.
He's 20 years old, and the only reason he has no ranking is because he has no money. And he knew, and his parents, I mean, he's got a crazy story about growing up in Aleppo. You know, the war starts, he can't train, the courts are bombed, then he gets older, he's playing against the wall, he gets put in like Asian ITF group, and they travel around. He can only travel to Muslim countries because of the visa.
Yeah.
He wins ITFs, then he's training in Damascus, war's going on, right next to Damascus is the Russian embassy next to the courts, he's training, bomb comes on, lands on it, shrapnel hits his arm, he's out. He's still got a scar on his arm. Wow. He plays with shrapnel inside of his arm. And this kid's 20 years old. It's like ridiculous. And he comes out, and not only does he play well, in the second week he finishes like in the top four with guys there who are 300, 400 in the world.
Incredible.
And this is what I mean about the tennis structure is so broken that unless you have money or you come from a nation which can give you opportunities to play, you are going to never have a shot. Like a guy from Syria is never going to have a chance. That's why he's moved here to Germany as a refugee status.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would be... What I loved the most about this format that we played is we gave guys who are talented, who needed a shot, didn't matter what your ranking was. If you're good enough, you can compete. And he earned his respect, and he's playing the rest of the events. And, you know, this is what I mean about, you know, whether it's black or Asian or something like that. You know, you're already behind the eight ball
completely
in this sport. But... You know, if you give these guys enough opportunities, some of them will prove themselves. Just getting that opportunity is tough.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic points. Like, that's, yeah, again, a player that I'd never heard of, but what a story. And like you said, there are so many out there that, yeah, you know, have similar, well, upbringings and backgrounds. So,
no, exactly. Yeah. It's a tough one because at the same time, you don't want to devalue any, because at the end of the day, that's what's good about sport, right? It doesn't matter what religion or race you are. You know, you go on court, especially tennis.
Quality shows through, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And but my argument is the point. I mean, like I said, with Mal, you know, Mal's a big inspiration. I spent a lot of time with him in his foundation in Jacksonville, Florida. And you know, we're talking about right in the ghetto, in the hood where, you know, you can't even stop at stop signs. You may make sure you don't get, and then I see that, and I see the, you know, the kids that grow up, like they'll never have a real shot, like, unless you're amazingly good. You know, Francis Tiafoe.
Yeah.
He's Sierra Leone. If he stayed in Sierra Leone, even he can be the same talent and play the same way. Why did he make it? Yeah, he's talented and worked hard, etc. But he's in DC, and he's been given a shot to display his talent,
and the infrastructure's there. Yeah,
the infrastructure's there. It's not in Sierra Leone. So how many kids in Sierra Leone actually have that? That's always a question that you never know the answer for. And the other thing is, like, you know, one closer to your home, I mean, in North London, I did a lot of volunteer work in Broadwater Farm, right?
Okay.
Which is the equivalent for Tottenham, you know, where the riots were and stuff like that. I mean, it's a lot of talented kids out there, hugely talented. But, you know, you think there's a kid, you know, are we going to really talk about that issue? The LTA building a $40 million center, £40 million center in Roehampton. You know, we should be putting money into those areas like Tottenham and all the council estates. And because I guarantee you there are a lot of good kids that would come out of that region, you know.
Completely. Just so much raw talent. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But we won't do it. We'll never address it. It's always going to, that's what I'm saying. It's a conversation no one really wants to have, but
you say that, Rodney. Like, this is one of the reasons why I created this page, because I want to basically show, you know, more black people that, yeah, that tennis is a sport that, you know, their kids can pick up, and you know, it's very lucrative. Like, if you look at Naomi Osaka recently being, well, she was announced as the highest paid female athlete of all time.
Exactly.
And
Roger was also one on the tennis.
Number one, exactly. And what, Serena and Osaka, they're the only two female athletes in the top 100, which is just incredible. And that just shows, you know, how lucrative the sport is. But yet, like you've really, you know, passionately spoke about, like, the lack of opportunities, you know, given to black players, it's something that needs to be addressed, basically. And I'm just hoping I can kind of help and push the conversation like along the way, like if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, and I think it's great. And I think there's always this sort of sentiment, black players or whatever it is, they, it's always a chip on their shoulder and they never get it. And look, especially if you're in the US and you're an LTA, Grand Slam Nation, France or whatever, and you're black, and you're going to have a shot of doing something because if you're good enough, you're talented enough, there's going to be people that notice you. And yes, you have to do, there's other factors that come into place, in terms of, your parents do need to be a little bit involved.
Yeah.
Help you. Tennis is not a sport like in football where you can just go to a club and you'll be taken care of and be picked up, right? It's a bit of a journey as a sport. But I think what you're trying to do is it's the right conversation to bring up, and I think it shouldn't be about, I always have this conversation with a lot of the black parents that I was handling or dealing with in terms of young good black kids from Tottenham that were training with me, and they were always saying, it's unfair, the system's unfair, and I said, okay, it is, and I'll be honest, it is, and we can always play that card, and whether that is, like my background, my parents are Anglo-Indian, so they're mixed race, white and Indian, okay, right? But even in that, I got relatives that are South African, Portuguese, all these kind of mixed up races. Yeah. In fact, and I said to them as well, like, my dad faced racism when he came over to Australia because, he was they raced him in India because he was not Indian.
Yeah.
They said, you're British or whatever it is they were, right? And then when he came over to Australia, they said, you're not
Australian.
You're not Australian, yeah. Right? And so, and even in our own family, my man, I'm telling you, like, in our own family, like, the racism was so bad that my dad, who was the darkest in his family, his grandma wouldn't walk with him in public because he was too dark, right? And he never got picked for teams because he was half British, all this stuff. So this is what I'm saying, like, with tennis, though, I think if you are a good player and you do have a lot of talent, it's one of the very few sports, because individual, that you can let your racket do most.
Exactly, yeah.
Right? There's no coach telling you he's not going to pick you for the team. There are, we can talk about little stuff, getting picked for national squads and county squads and all that kind of stuff, and there is, racial undertones there. But, I mean, at the end of the day, like, these players have shown that they can break through if they are talented enough, and tennis is a good platform to do that.
No, completely. Completely. Yeah. Listen, Rodley, have you got more to say, or because that's I can speak to you for a lot longer, to be honest, but I don't want to keep you for too long.
No. Listen, last thing I'd say is, in terms of, like, I want to also just address the thing about, for parents who are listening or want to get their kids into tennis, making it to the top in Osaka and stuff like that is great, but even college tennis, that route is so amazing for the kids to to pursue, that I think any parents, no matter what race, white, Asian, black, Indian, whatever it is, they should definitely look at it as, okay, does a kid love the sport? How do I support them, for their journey? But it shouldn't just be about making it as a pro.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of stuff that kids can do. And Paul Jobs is a great example. I mean, what a young kid, council estate, lost his parents.
Yeah.
Goes to this college, and he wasn't amazing. Like, he played five in his first year, and we have a player right now who trains with us who played against them, and played against him personally, and he wasn't exactly a standout.
Yeah.
And he's worked his ass off, and he's got to where he's got through.
NCAA champion, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And he's taking his opportunities, and now he's going to go and try and go pro. And I think those opportunities there, are huge for any player pursuing tennis as a serious level, right?
Yeah.
So don't just think about pro tennis. There's also the college route, because you can get your degree and, you can make some changes, through the sport of tennis.
No,
that's what I would leave it on.
Well said. Appreciate that a lot. I completely agree. Like, I think it's one of the main, in terms of sport in general, like, tennis is probably the most, you get so much out of it, like, psychologically, because, it's just you out there on your own. You've got to figure it out.
Plus obviously the physical element as well, like you're working literally every part of your body, so there really isn't a sport like it in my eyes. And I love other sports. I like football, I like basketball, but yeah, tennis is very special to me. So no,
it's a tough sport.
I really like what you said there. It's a really great way to end it, so appreciate that.
No worries, thanks for having me on. Anything you guys need, let me know, and we'll keep you posted on how Exo Tennis is developing. But I think it's got maybe a few more events in its lifetime, but I think when the tour comes back, we're all going to look forward to it.
No, indeed, well said. Listen, Waddy, again, thanks a lot for being on, and yeah, it's been a pleasure to speak to you, and definitely look forward to kind of carrying on watching Exo Tennis in Germany and in the States. So hope it all goes well.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Eugene. Appreciate it, mate.
Cheers, you take care.
Okay, cheers. Bye-bye.